private train. That was very exciting. And then we went to, then when Jews finished, we flew over Vesuvius, looked down into the crater. That was very exciting. But we went to Pompeii. We sightseed all over the place, needless to say. We went to all these places. And then when Jews hauled his flag down and we left, we went to Paris. And in Paris, we got a Navy car out of the Navy pool there. And our chauffeur was a Turkish prince. He'd been driving us around. He knew Paris like nobody human. I mean, he just knew every nook and corner of Paris. Well, of course, Jews had been assistant naval attaché to France, Spain, and Portugal, you see, so he knew Paris. But this one just could go one better. And one time, Jews couldn't make out his nationality. And he said, what nationality are you? And he said, I'm a Turk. And he said, I'm Prince so-and-so. And he pulled out his passport, which had all seals and everything else on it. And he said that he was the only one of the family that ever made a living, that ever worked for a living. And he said that I drive the car and I make enough money and I save it all up. And they said, I go out in one evening, I spend the whole thing because I live like a prince. And he was the first cousin of Fuad, who was the sultan, you see. And so Jews said, well, I've just seen Fuad and all that. Well, he said he's in Paris now. And so one Sunday he called up and he said that Fuad wanted to come see Jews, and he came as the prince then, and he paid a call. And then I nearly died because Jews said, and when they said goodbye, he turned to the prince and he said that he wanted the car and so-and-so, that he had to take us to a party, you see. And then it made me so uncomfortable because here was this poor prince staying out in the rain with the chauffeurs, do you see, while we went into a party. Uh-huh. That nearly died, and the children nearly had a fit over this, but he was perfectly wonderful chauffeur. He was absolutely, he opened the door and he tucked in your rug, he was this way, and he was absolutely perfect.
Apparently he enjoyed it.
Loved it dearly. And then we were there Bastille Day, and so then Jews wanted the children to see going down and Bastille, you see, and then he wanted to go up to Montmartre. Well, we were in the official car, and we were stopped by a policeman, that no cars were allowed up there, do you see? So he turned around and went just a little further away, just in plain sight of the policeman, and said to Jews, said, Admiral, may I fly your flag? And Jews said, well, yes, it wouldn't help at all. And so he unfurled his flag, and he went right by the same policeman, and he went, bah! And we went sailing off, just like that. That was our prince chauffeur. Oh, it was really awfully funny. So, then we came back, and that was the last of our European trip. Then we landed in Baltimore, and we were in Baltimore for about a year when National Ed called Jews up and wanted to take this job over in Germany, which he did with National Lead. And then when he finished the job in Germany, they wanted to come here to the office here, which he did. And so that's how we came over here. And that was the end of our...
So you didn't buy this house until after... You retired.
Oh, we didn't have it. No, we lived in Baltimore for about 3 years. I guess. Yeah, about 3 or 4 years. We retired and went to Baltimore to live. That's where we thought we were going to stay. But then when he went to National Lead, I stayed in Baltimore while he, because I couldn't go to Europe. They wouldn't let people in Germany then. And so then, when he came back, and he finished the job over there with Hamburg, the National Lead owned half a factory, a non-ferrous factory. It was the biggest one in Europe. And the British and German owned the other half. And they had 150 bombs. And National Lead thought it was a dead duck. and sent Jews over there to see what could be salvaged. Well, he got the thing going. It's going full tilt right now. And so then when he finished that job, they said they want him to come here to the Washington office. So there was no point of our going living in Baltimore. So that's how we came here. And so we've been here ever since. We came here in 50. And been here since Jude died in 57. So that's the end of my life.
That has been.
I think that I don't know. Jews were such a modest person, and he never sort of blew his own trumpet at all. And then I always felt that he was it, you know. And I just followed along.
Well, your story is about flying over to Egypt, and then the Villa Yama, and all this. This is the type of thing that really liven up an article or a book or a study of the American Navy.
Well, I tell you, another thing is that I really forgot about the Duchess of D'Aosta. Now, that was really quite something, because she lived in the Cafe de Monte in Naples, and she was the most marvelous person you've ever known. She was the sister-in-law of King Emmanuel, and she was Helen of Orleans. She was the sister of the Count of Paris, and she was so royal. She was the only one of the royal family that stayed in Italy during the war, and the Germans took over the Cafe de Monte Palace, and she was given just a little suite. And I got this message from Jules's aide that her lady-in-waiting had called up and wanted me to come see her. Did I tell you this? I think I did. Well, anyway, I went there, and then she came over to see the Villa Emma, and nobody, she'd never been out of the Cafe de Monte, but she was dying to see the Villa Emma. And I have a letter, I know that, I mean, such little things, and you think of people that, I mean, there she was, royal, living in a palace and had everything on earth, but she was freezing cold after the war, and she didn't have anything. And, you know, we went to the ship service, and we bought a wind jacket, a warm, nice, lined wind jacket, and sent it to her for a Christmas present. And I have a letter from her saying that it was really the warm, I mean, from a, she never wrote. I really think that letter might be sort of interesting to me, because, I mean, when you think of an American wind jacket from the ship service store in the Royalty, you know, it was really something. Is this thing on?
Yes, ma'am.
But we were still living at the Elbow Beach Hotel. But we used to go over and have picnic lunch with the children Sundays on the base. And we went over there, and King Carol of Romania came with Lupescu, his lady love, you know. And the Governor General of Bermuda was told that the king was to be received at the governor's house, but she not, repeat not, for Lupescu, his lady love, you see. Well, the general, the governor gave a dinner, a stag dinner for the king, and Jews went to that. And he called me up and before he came home and said, that the king wanted to know whether we would have tea with the king and Madame Sidi at the Belmont. He had the penthouse at the Belmont Hotel. And we went there and had tea with King Carol and Lupescu. She was very lovely. She had a lovely, really beautiful skin, and she had just a gold bracelet around her ankle, was the only jewelry she had, and this lovely red hair. And she poured tea, and we had tea there. Well, I got so mad, and I said, Jews, it really makes me so mad, because I think the man is just as guilty as the woman, and why should the woman have to take it, you know, be ostracized when the man isn't? And I said, I just think it's the limit. But I said, we're in no position to entertain him at the Elbow Beach was nothing but draftsmen and people of that kind. They all, Juice was the only one that had a coat on in the dining room. And I said, what do you think about asking to come out of the base for a picnic with the children? And Juice said, I think it's fine. So he called up his aide. And they were delighted. They would love to come, do you see? Well, this had to be secret because, of course, if they'd known the Jews was doing that, the wire would have been awful. You'd see, have Madame do. Well, I said, oh, I could see the sandwiches would be thick bread with a piece of Spam in it from the Elbow Beach Hotel. So I called up Martha Creighton, who's this American friend. I knew she had just ordered some Virginia hams from Charles in New York, you see, and she was a strict Presbyterian. She, I mean, wouldn't play cards, wouldn't gamble, wouldn't do anything, you see. And I told her the secrets, and I said, would you and the children do this, but you have to provide the food. I mean, from there, I mean, we'd have to work it together. And she said she'd love to. So we got a delicious picnic up. And we stopped for the king, but the Prescu said she was packing, so she couldn't come. But the king came, and he sat down on a rock and ate picnic and had a perfectly wonderful time, was terribly interested in the base and all that. And then there was papaya tree growing up there, and he wanted to know what that was. And Anne climbed up the papaya tree and picked a ripe papaya for the king and gave it to his majesty, you see. And he took out a penknife and cut it open and scooped it up and ate it and was just thrilled to death. Now that was King Carol. So I think that's kind of a cute story.
Yes, indeed.
That was a good one. But that was all comedy, that was that. I do now. The children. He always wanted his children with him. And he just loved home. It just meant everything in the world was home. And the children idolized him, absolutely idolized him. He was a wonderful man, really a wonderful man. And he was a very sweet man, but he was very, very, he never lost his temper. But he had complete control over everything. And the men on the ship just worshipped him wherever he went. I mean, I've never heard anybody criticize him in any way, shape, or form. I've never heard any repercussions except wonderful praise about him. And the men just adored him. Oh, I got more letters from the sailors and people that served with him and all that. And so there was nobody like him. And he was such fun. And he was a gay bird. I mean, he wasn't. He knew the world all right, but he was a thorough gentleman from the word go. Thorough gentleman. He said about drinking. I said, "Dude, because I never take a drink, because I'm allergic to it." And I said, "Dude, how am I going to survive this Navy if I don't take a drink?" Well, he said, "I tell you, if there's one member of the family that does the drinking for the family to keep up their reputation, and I'm that person, you don't have to worry." So I mean,